People are happy when you tell them what you need and you don't expect them to guess or be mind readers. It has certainly helped my marriage. I got married 3 years ago, and I think the only reason that my husband and I were able to successfully move in together and I was able to integrate him into my life with my son is because I set clear boundaries around what I was and wasn't willing to do in terms of this new relationship.
Melissa Urban is the co-founder and CEO of Whole30 and an authority on helping people create lifelong healthy habits. She's a 7-time New York Times bestselling author and has been featured by People, Good Morning America, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, Forbes, CNBC, and she lives in Salt Lake City, Utah. Before we get into this week's interview, just a quick reminder that we've created a special offer specifically for listeners of this show on your very first purchase of any of my products on amymyersmd.com. Simply enter promo code TAKEBACK15 at checkout and you'll receive a 15% discount on your first AMMD purchase. That's promo code TAKEBACK15 at amymyersmd.com. Melissa, it is so great to have you on Take Back Your Health podcast. We go way back, really, to your early days of Whole30. And I kind of know your story, but probably most of our listeners are not familiar with how you got started with Whole30. Can you kind of walk us through that journey that you had to get there?
Yeah, you and I have been in this since, gosh, 2011, 2012, like in the way back days. But Whole30 was founded in 2009, and it started off as a two-person self-experiment. I was really into CrossFit at the time. I had my own CrossFit gym. I was traveling and training for some of the CrossFit kettlebell certs, and I was really focused on my athletic performance and recovery. And fitness had played a really big role in my recovery from my drug addiction in the year 2000. So I'm 9 years in recovery at this point, really into health and fitness. And one day after a really difficult Olympic lifting session, my co-founder and I were sitting around with some friends and talking about a nutrition seminar we had just attended and some of the factors in that seminar that he had talked about. Rob Wolf had talked about it. It was his seminar. The dietary factors that could be promoting inflammation and digestive distress and blood sugar regulation in a really sneaky way. So we were talking about this seminar and my co-founder said, you know, maybe we should try it. Maybe we should do this 30-day experiment where we pull out all of these foods that could be potentially problematic and see what happens. And I remember at the time I was eating Thin Mints straight out of the sleeve because I had just exercised and I had earned them. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. When do you want to start? And he said, let's start right now. And that was really the beginnings of Whole30 as we know it today, 15 years later, a two-person self-experiment that had such a radically profound and permanent transformation on my health, my habits, and my relationship with food that I decided to share about it on my little CrossFit training blog. And the rest is kind of history.
Well, can you share with us kind of what did you feel? I mean, from the beginning, because I too have gone through elimination diets, the Whole30, my program, the Myers Way. Did you have aches and pains? Did you have die-off? And then at what point did you start feeling better and what did you notice?
Yes. So going into it, I already ate pretty healthy according to traditional standards. I was doing a lot of whole grains, a lot of low-fat dairy. I did a lot of protein shakes. I cooked some of my food, but I did a lot of the sort of like stuff that we thought was healthy, like the protein shakes, and I thought I was doing okay. I felt great. I didn't have any health issues or complaints. So I was really looking for performance improvements in the gym. I thought maybe this dietary switch will help me perform better and recover quicker. What I discovered, of course, was this whole world of new normal that was available to me. The first week or so was a little challenging. My energy was a little bit down. I was certainly craving my iced caramel turbo latte from Dunkin' Donuts, but I didn't miss a ton of foods and it wasn't particularly hard for me to stick to the regimen. I would say 2 weeks in, I woke up and it was like someone had flipped a switch and I was now in Energizer Bunny mode. I had so much energy from the moment I woke up at 5 a.m. to go to the gym until the moment I went to bed. No more 2 p.m. head on desk slump. I was sleeping so much better. I was sleeping okay before and I was really prioritizing sleep because I woke up so early, but my sleep was just more restful. It felt more deep. I woke up feeling more refreshed. My mood was happier. People at the office started asking me like, what have you been doing? Because I just seemed so much happier and lighter. my digestion improved tremendously. I didn't realize how often I was walking around bloated, or the fact that like having diarrhea regularly wasn't normal. That was just my normal. And it wasn't until I got better that I was like, oh my goodness, I could feel so much better. And then my relationship with food changed dramatically. I feel like I learned other ways to deal with negative emotions, stress, discomfort, you know, in the absence of the foods that I would normally use for those self-soothing and relieve anxiety and loneliness, I had to think of other things to do. And I did that quite successfully. I always say that my first Whole 30 was the first time I was able to get off the scale and out of the mirror. And when I was done, I knew I would never go back to the way I was eating before.
Right. So what are some of the mechanisms, or what did you do to self-soothe, or when you had those cravings or devoid of emotion, what did you do?
One of my biggest things, and I still do this to this day, is tidying or cleaning. I find that movement really helps me process my feelings or emotions. And like when I don't know what to do, I can't always get outside and go for a walk, which is another one of the strategies that I started using then and still use now. But I can always find 5 minutes in my day to do some dishes or put away dishes from the dishwasher, clean up the counter, fold some clothes or fold some laundry. And I found that was really, really helpful. Just by moving my body, I discovered it was helpful to help me kind of process through some of that stress, some of that anxiety, some of those feelings. I started talking to people about how I felt more, my coworkers, my family, my friends. Instead of just hiding it and sort of eating my feelings, I started talking about my feelings. I would journal, which was a practice that I had done all throughout my teens and early 20s, but I had kind of let go. So those were just things that, and like, honestly, I just discovered that it was okay to sit with discomfort. I didn't always have to distract myself from it or try to numb myself to it. In a lot of ways, my first Whole 30 showed me the ways that I was using food in the way I used to use drugs to self-soothe, to numb, to distract, to relieve anxiety. And I really felt like it was the next step in my recovery process.
And now there are some forms of meditation that are literally doing the dishes and just being aware. Do you do it as a meditative type of thing, or is it more movement for you?
So for me, it has transitioned into a bit of moving meditation. I adopted a meditation practice about 5 or 6 years ago, and I now realize that like hiking and walking are forms of moving meditation. For me though, then it was a physical expression of the anxiety I was feeling. I would have a really hard time dropping into my body and trying to examine how I feel. How do you feel? What's underneath this? And exploring that with curiosity and not judgment. But I found if I could almost dispel some of that anxious or nervous or uncomfortable energy through movement, I was then able to kind of like a kid throwing a tantrum. I would throw a tantrum, but I would be doing the dishes while I was doing it. And then when I got done, I felt a little bit better and I was able to more calmly kind of tap into how I was feeling and exploring what that source was.
Right. And you mentioned having this energy from the moment you woke up till the moment you went to bed. And I too have experienced that clarity, and it's sort of a brightness in the world that you don't realize exists. One of the things that I personally have struggled with is when I have that much energy, I have difficulty sleeping. You mentioned that you go to bed and you sleep really restfully in a deep sleep and have great sleep when you're eating this way. I guess, can you walk me through that? Because with all this energy, end up getting like almost pushed over the top to where my mind is racing at night and don't settle down, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Because I have so much energy.
Yeah. It wasn't like I had this like manic, frenetic, like I have all this energy, what am I supposed to do? It was just that I had this calm, steady energy throughout my day. I no longer had these dips and sort of like the roller coaster energy, which it wasn't super pronounced before because I was pretty good about eating regularly, including protein with all of my meals. I ate plenty of dietary fat, and I was pretty insulin sensitive going into the Whole 30. And I do tolerate carbs better than just about anybody I've ever met. But it was just this steady energy. I would wake up without an alarm in the morning, be so pumped to go to the gym, go have a great workout, start work and feeling energized and productive. Over the course of my morning, my focus would stay totally solid. If I had a meeting and couldn't get a meal in at lunchtime, my focus still stayed solid. My energy was still solid. So I felt like I became very well fat adapted. And then over the course of my day, my energy just stayed steady until around 6 p.m. as I'm starting to get ready for bed and my melatonin starts to peak. I felt like I was able to really relax into bedtime. I no longer had that tired but wired feeling at the end of the night. And I would go to bed at 9 and wake up at 5 and do it all over again.
It's incredible. Well, there may not, with as successful as Whole30 has been, there may not be someone out there that doesn't know what it is. But just in case there is someone who isn't really clear on what very specifically the Whole30 is, I mean, can you walk us through what foods that you are eliminating for the 30 days? Do you add foods back in? Just kind of walk us through the whole process, if you don't mind.
Definitely. I'm sure a lot of people, most people probably have heard about Whole30, but you may have heard about it in a roundabout way. Maybe a media piece or maybe your sister's hairdresser's cousin was talking about it. And you may have this idea that Whole30 is a weight loss diet or that it's a quick fix or some kind of crash diet or fad diet. And so I love the opportunity to clarify. Whole30 is an elimination diet, a 30-day self-experiment designed to teach you how the foods you've been eating work in your unique context. There may be foods in your diet that you think are healthy, even the quote healthy stuff, that may be having a negative impact on your cravings, your digestion, your blood sugar regulation, your immune system, and any number of symptoms, things like allergies, asthma, eczema, migraines, anxiety, digestive issues. Maybe some of the foods in your diet are contributing to that, and Whole30 is a great self-experiment to help you figure that out for you. So for 30 days, you eliminate food groups that the scientific literature and our 15 years of clinical experience have shown to be commonly problematic to varying degrees across a broad range of people. So you're going to pull these foods out, and we talked about the elimination groups. They would be all forms of added sugar, alcohol, grains, legumes, and dairy, with a few exceptions. You're going to pull those out for 30 days. And for 30 days, your meals are going to be based in meat, seafood, and eggs, lots of vegetables and fruit, natural healthy fats, herbs, seasoning, spices. We get very creative with our Whole30 meals. At the end of those 30 days, you then add those eliminated food groups back into your diet one at a time, carefully and systematically, like a scientific experiment, and you compare your experience. So if, like me, you give up dairy for 30 days and all of a sudden the bloating and the diarrhea and the alien in your belly feeling goes away, and then you reintroduce dairy and immediately that comes back, it gives you very valuable intel about how dairy works in your system in your current context. And then what you do is take that information that you've learned through your elimination and reintroduction and you apply it however you like in your food freedom. You get to make the decisions about what works best for you and what's right for you based on your Whole30 learnings.
Awesome. And now over the years, have you all refined things such as maybe pulling out nightshades for those with autoimmunity? I mean, is there anything, like, do you have special tracks or anything within the Whole30 that addresses candida, SIBO, autoimmunity, sort of more commonly broad, large groups of illnesses, so to speak?
We do not, because we leave that to professionals like you. The Whole30 is not a medical elimination plan. It's not designed to diagnose or treat specific medical conditions. We can make recommendations. Our registered dietitians and board of healthcare advisors can make general recommendations for people. If you're going into the Whole30 with an autoimmune condition, here are some additional foods you might want to pay attention to. If you're going in with a digestive disorder like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's, here are some food groups you might want to pay attention to. However, the Whole30 is a self-practice. It is something that you take on your own to give you a head start as to figuring out which foods, if any, may be contributing to these conditions. If you have access to a qualified healthcare provider or a registered dietitian to create a specific elimination program based on your health history and context, and who can lead and guide you through that program, that's my first recommendation. I would love for you to do that. That's best case scenario. But a lot of people don't have access to that through their insurance. They don't have access. You know, it requires a lot of privilege to be able to work with a functional medicine provider or a registered dietitian for the length of time that an elimination diet can take. So we offer a free, kind of cost-effective, very accessible way for you to get some of those learnings. And if you decide at the end of your program that you want to dig deeper, then I refer them to people like you.
And is there anybody that you all don't recommend do it? Is it safe for children?
Yeah. So if you have a history of eating disorder or disordered eating diagnosed or otherwise, the Whole30 is not a program that we recommend for you. Any restriction in that context can be triggering. Any restriction can create disordered eating habits, even if none existed before. And by nature, all elimination diets are strict by design. You want to completely eliminate those food groups, then reintroduce them very carefully. And though the Whole30 does not have an aspect of caloric restriction, you're not counting calories, you're not restricting calories, you're not tracking macros, the restriction during the elimination phase can be triggering. So that's a population we generally say. If you're pregnant or nursing, we always want you to check with your healthcare provider to make sure that the program is right for your context. And if you want to do the Whole30 with kids, generally speaking, we recommend that you have a really good reason. If that child has some kind of health condition that you are specifically, like eczema, my son had eczema when he was a baby, and we did an elimination diet to see if we could identify his food triggers. But if you just want to bring your kids along in your Whole30 experience, you can have them eat meat, seafood, and eggs, vegetables, and fruit without asking them to follow the very strict requirements of a full Whole30. So we've got an article coming out with a registered dietitian to talk about kids in particular, but you do find resources for doing the Whole30 with children on our website.
Yes. And I would say as a medical provider, it is generally safe to do with children. Most people are not missing anything by not eating gluten. And certainly they can get their calcium in many other ways. But of course, the age of the child is a contributing factor there. I too, my child had eczema, severe eczema, and we eliminated gluten and dairy from her diet. And now she's almost seven, and we were just at Disney World, and there were occasions where she wanted to have gluten and dairy, and I do let her. It's not an allergy. She doesn't have autoimmunity. Her eczema has completely gone away. So a couple of times a year, I'll let her have it, but now she recognizes that her stomach hurts afterwards, and she doesn't even want to eat it. And so, you know, I do find that's extremely valuable, is when children understand what they're eating and how it affects them. And then really the children end up being the police more than the parents are with these foods, because they know how it affects them, which of course is the entire purpose of the Whole30 or any elimination diet, is really to understand how these foods affect you.
Yes. And a lot of the resources we have around kids are designed for how to talk to your kids about the Whole30. Kids are very impressionable. They're very tuned in, I think, to diet culture and the negative influence that diet culture can have, especially on younger kids. So we recommend talking to kids about the Whole30 as a self-experiment, not a diet, not talking about the weight loss aspect, but talking about learning how different foods work in your body and how we all like to eat foods that make us feel good. And I think that can be a really important piece of doing the Whole30 with your kids too.
Oh, yes. When I saw children in my clinic, that's exactly how it would explain it to them, that they're going to go home and do a science experiment. And then the children would get really excited that they were going to do this experiment and see how they felt with certain foods and stuff like that. So yeah, you need to get their buy-in for sure.
Yeah. I love that.
Well, I mean, you have been doing this for, let's see, how many years is that now? Almost 15 years. So how has Whole30 evolved over those 15 years?
Oh, I mean, in so many ways. And you would hope that it would, right? We aim to be a science-backed program based on clinical evidence and the scientific literature. So as we learn more about food and the way food impacts our bodies, our program rules have certainly evolved throughout the years, in that we are taking a good hard look at the scientific evidence around the foods and the ingredients that we're excluding. And if the evidence just doesn't hold up anymore, we're making a rule change. So we've seen rule changes throughout the years. Our voice and tone have also changed dramatically throughout the years. When I started Whole30 in 2009, I was heavily invested in the CrossFit community, and CrossFit, they were our largest sort of customer base. CrossFit gym and gym owners would do the Whole30 with their gym, and everybody would get super excited about the performance results. But with that group, I had a very tough love approach. It was like, look, do it or don't, follow the rules or go somewhere else. And that worked at the time. That was how I talked to myself. That was how I talked to these CrossFitters, who tended to be younger and already relatively fit and already pretty bought into like working hard and sacrificing. But as the program grew and those CrossFit athletes started sending their moms and their aunts and their grandparents to our nutrition seminars, you know, our population evolved. And that same tough love, do it or go somewhere else approach didn't work. And I began talking to myself differently through my own personal growth and my own life experiences. So I think you'll find the voice and the tone of the program to be far more welcoming, far more inclusive, far more meeting people where they are, letting good enough be good enough. And I think that has helped the program grow quite a bit.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to approach it, because I certainly approached my patients in my clinic in a similar kind of way, right? I mean, you have essentially towards the end of my practice, everyone had autoimmunity. And it is a bit more tough love, just because the stakes, I do believe, are higher. If you have one autoimmune condition, you're way more likely to get another. And then I was seeing people with 3, 4, 5, 6 autoimmune conditions at the end of their rope. But it is an interesting approach to, I think we could all benefit from that, right? A little more self-love and a little less toughness to get us through.
Yeah, I think as I grew as well, I learned and began to understand that not everyone else's lived experience mimics my own. And as I began to acknowledge my own privilege of moving through the world, the things that were easy to me because of who I am, the fact that I go to the gym 6 mornings a week, well, yeah, I do, because I have full-time childcare and I work for myself and I set my own hours and my gym membership is a business expense. Not everybody has that same lived experience. So to go in and talk about like, well, it's just a matter of priorities is just so off the mark. You're really missing the mark with comments like that. So I began really listening to my community and building resources for them and helping them understand that there is no one way to do the Whole 30, and there is no such thing as a perfect Whole 30. And where success is found for you is going to look different than where it's found for others. And I think just acknowledging that and addressing it goes a really long way towards people feeling like your program is accessible. Maybe it is for them, and maybe it is something that they could actually do.
Right. And I mean, I think the end experience of just learning how food affects you is an incredible gift. And then, as you said, which is exactly what I say to my patients, how you choose to then live your life after that is completely up to you. If you want to continue to eat the foods and continue to feel bad and potentially end up with a health condition, that's your prerogative. That's your choice to make in life. But I think just understanding how these things affect you is a very big gift to people in the world, and then letting them make their own decisions.
Yeah. I mean, I also serve a different population than you do, in that people are not coming to me because they're sick. They're coming because their energy is low. They feel like they're just not as motivated anymore. Their sleep is troubled. Maybe their digestion isn't awesome. Like, they just generally think that they could feel better and want to know how. And so over the years, I have found myself becoming a lot less dogmatic about certain things too. If we were having this conversation in 2010, I would have said, nobody ever needs to eat gluten, ever. Nobody ever needs to. There's just no reason to. You can get everything you need from vegetables and fruit. And over the years, I'm like, well, wait a minute. Like, not everybody can't tolerate gluten. And some people do really well with gluten in their diet in varying amounts. And if you love it and it's like something that's really special and worth it to you, yeah, you should eat it. We should aim to make our diets as broad and joyful as possible while still feeling as good as we want to feel. And so I think that's been another big evolution in the program too, is just my own personal realization that, like, I don't always have to be so dogmatic about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, as I used to tell patients, I don't drink wine. I don't really advocate that you drink wine. But hey, if you drink wine with your partner a couple nights a week while watching the sunset, and that is literally your meaning of life. And I mean, the endorphins and all of the good healing molecules that come out, and it boosts your immune system because this is your thing, that may well out counteract any effect of the wine, right? And so, yes, I suppose certainly if you have autoimmunity and you're listening to this, I do not think you should ever eat gluten. If you're not in that boat and you don't have an allergy, I do see the value in that it's not as black and white as I believe you and I definitely learned and went through life 15 years ago. And I've seen many people in our space that we've known for a long time really broadening and changing their thoughts about all of this as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good thing. Sometimes I don't understand it when people ding the Whole 30 for like, oh, you, but that's not what you wrote in It Starts With Food. And I'm like, I wrote that book in 2012. That was a lifetime ago for me. It was a lifetime ago for the science. Like, if things change and people change, you should want us to evolve along with the science and along with our own personal growth and along with meeting our community where we are. Like, I'll never apologize for that.
Well, speaking of, you have a new book coming out. So do you want to tell us about that?
I do, speaking of. So this has been like years in the making. The original Whole30 book, it's called The Whole30. It's our flagship book. That came out in April 2015. And that's like the guide for how to do the Whole30. It's got everything you need in the front half for how to do the program and an extensive FAQ and tips and tricks and best practices. And then the second half of the book has 100 recipes for the Whole30. And that's been sort of the go-to, like, ride or die since 2015. But a lot has changed since 2015. We've had rule changes. We've had recommendation changes. We're less dogmatic about things like snacking or smoothies. And our voice and language have also changed quite a bit. So I've been talking about updating that book for years now, a few years. And I think the discussion started in like the end of 2019, and then the pandemic hit and everything went kind of haywire. But I realized over the course of the last few years, that book didn't need an update. I needed to write an entirely new book, a whole new book start to finish, really embracing the current modern Whole30, not just the original Whole30 that I first launched in 2019, but the new plant-based version of the Whole30, the vegan version that we launched in 2022 in response to our community saying we would love a version that didn't have any animal products. So we just announced about 2 weeks ago, it's called The New Whole30. It's coming August 6th, 2024, and it is a completely revamped start-to-finish definitive guide to doing the Whole30, both the original and the plant-based, with over 100 all-new recipes.
Wow. Well, that sounds fantastic. I'd love to dive into the vegan portion, because it's something that when I wrote The Autoimmune Solution in 2015, I did a sort of a pescatarian version, but it was very difficult for me to do a vegan version just because of the grains and legumes. So can we dive into that? What are you recommending for vegans?
That is another area in which I would say the Whole30 and I personally have evolved tremendously. In 2012, when in It Starts With Food, we talked about a vegan Whole30. And we basically were like, you can't really do a Whole30 without animal products because we exclude all of your plant-based protein sources. And also, you should probably just eat meat. Like, I was audacious enough to say, you should just eat meat because I thought it was healthier. And that stemmed from my own personal experience being a vegetarian for a really long time and then going back to eating meat and how much healthier it made me. But over the years, of course, our stance on that has evolved. People eat plant-based foods and a vegan diet for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's economic, sometimes it's religious, sometimes it's ethical, sometimes it's health-based. And of course, there is no one-size-fits-all. Just because a vegan diet didn't work well for me doesn't mean it doesn't work very well for others. So we wanted to really create a plant-based version of the Whole30 that took into account, as best as we could, the potentially inflammatory factors of certain foods, blood sugar regulation, which is something that can be very challenging to manage on a vegan diet. So we had our team of registered dietitians create a plan that uses primarily legumes as protein sources. So soy, unprocessed or minimally processed forms of soy, tofu, tempeh, edamame, and beans and lentils as a primary protein source. We do eliminate all grains because if you're getting protein from legumes and lentils and soy, you don't need to include grains. You're getting plenty of vegetables and fruit, and that allows people to test the reintroduction of non-gluten grains and gluten-containing grains. And then the rest of the rules are basically the same. Added sugar is out for the elimination phase. Alcohol is out. We do also offer a track during reintroduction if people do want to reintroduce some form of animal protein, perhaps dairy, perhaps eggs, perhaps fish. That's an option in the reintroduction phase. So the vegan version, the plant-based version of the Whole30 is, as we made sure that you are getting enough protein, minimum 70 grams a day at least, via our meal template. You're getting that from less processed forms of soy, and so still whole foods. And we're allowing you to eliminate foods like gluten-containing grains that do tend to be more commonly problematic and see how they work for you when you reintroduce them.
And what about the theory around, I too was a vegetarian for 27 years, so back when I was doing that, there was a lot of food combining, such as the black beans with the brown rice, so that you then got a complete protein. So if you're still eliminating those grains, where are you saying that they're getting that from the vegetables to get the complete protein?
Yeah, nuts and seeds are a really great complementary protein source. And I think we know now food combining is cool in theory, and that, like, yeah, you're getting complete protein if you eat rice and beans together. And I think that's great. But also, like, our body is going to combine amino acids based on the foods we eat over the course of our days and our weeks. It's not like in that one particular meal you need to be so hyper specific. So we've designed our meal template such that you're getting your primary protein sources from soy, unprocessed forms of soy, and legumes, I mean beans and lentils. You're supplementing with some whole food based plant-based protein powders. So like pea protein is a very hypoallergenic source. And I believe pea protein is complete, technically considered complete. And then you're supplementing with nuts and seeds, flax and chia and hemp and various forms of nuts and seeds that are also providing a complementary amino acid profile.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I found for a lot of people, I mean, particularly soy is rather inflammatory, but I mean, particularly since so much of it is GMO these days. And peas.
That's the tricky part.
Yeah. Peas, sorry to interrupt, but peas, I used to use a pea-based protein powder in my clinic as well. And I just had so many, I mean, I personally had problems with it, but I had so many people have problems with it. But it's certainly a huge step in the right direction for it being more all-inclusive, right? Including all dietary
values, maybe.
Yeah, values, preferences.
Yeah, totally.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. We do have more troubleshooting on the plant-based Whole30 than we do the original Whole30, because we have historically found that soy and beans and lentils can be challenging for a lot of people from a digestive standpoint, from an inflammatory standpoint. And the plant-based Whole30 may not work as well for some as the original Whole30, but it does give you an avenue to explore. If you've done the original Whole30 and you're like, man, I know what food groups work for me, I feel great, but you do want to add more plant-based foods into your diet, it can give you a comparison and help you identify the plant-based protein sources that maybe you could supplement with once in a while that do work well for your body. So aside from just being vegetarian or being vegan and wanting to try an elimination program to really dial that in, it's also a good way for people to kind of dip their toes in the water of a 100% plant-based diet and decide for themselves whether that or maybe some combination of a plant-forward approach without giving up all animal protein would work best for them.
So do you all currently offer the vegan track in Whole30?
Yes. So, yep, it's available on the website under the plant-based program. And so we've got rules and meal planning template and recipes. There's sort of an entire side of Whole30 now called PB Whole30, plant-based Whole30, its own Instagram channel. But the book is now, the front matter is all related to the Whole30 program as a whole, the elimination diet approach. And then there's a section for original Whole30 with recipes and a section for plant-based Whole30 with recipes.
Wonderful. And do you have a favorite recipe, both from the original track, it doesn't need to be from the original book, and then as well as the plant-based that you like to cook or want to share?
I don't cook a ton of plant-based at home because I like animal protein and we eat it with just about every meal, but testing some of the plant-based recipes was so fantastic. I found so many recipes that I loved. There's a macrobiotic bowl that's on the cover of the book that is hands down delicious, that comes with like a dressing. I can't remember the kind of dressing it comes with. I remember it being like a bright yellow, maybe it's like a turmeric, but it's delicious. There are one or two recipes from the original Whole30 book that were so favorites of our community that we just updated them. So there's a recipe called Melissa's Chicken Hash, because I'm not a huge egg person. I like eggs, but like I don't eat eggs for breakfast a lot. I find that other protein sources tend to leave me feeling more full and energized as the day goes on. So this Melissa's breakfast hash is chicken and sweet potato and apples and some apple cider vinegar and some spinach. And we've updated that with a yogurt sort of Raita sauce, a plant-based yogurt sauce that is heaven. I want to put that sauce on everything. So it's been really fun to cook my way through the new recipes and get to taste test the variety.
I bet. Yeah, that's the best part. And I know that you mentioned earlier and you have a book, Food Freedom. So how does Melissa go through life? Is it Whole30 all the time? Is it come and go?
Yeah. So I haven't done a Whole30 since April 2020. I did one. We ran a group Whole30 as the pandemic kind of really ramped up. People really wanted that sort of touchstone, and I did it with people then as part of the group experience. But I probably won't ever do another Whole30 again. I really don't need it. I've done 7 or 8 programs over the course of the last 15 years. I've really dialed in on the foods that work well for me. And over the course of the last few years, I've discovered that in the right quantities and contexts, even the foods that don't work great, I can still include them in my diet in a way that feels delicious and lets me celebrate family traditions, but that still keeps me feeling really good. So my everyday diet includes mostly Whole30 foods. It's very easy to cook like that. I know it makes me feel my best, and I have so many recipes. So the bulk of my meals are Whole30, but I probably eat rice in some form every day. I eat hummus pretty regularly. We love hot buttered popcorn as like our nighttime movie treat, so I eat corn pretty regularly. Black beans work great for me. And over the years, I've been able to tolerate dairy better by including small amounts in my diet regularly. I know I'm not lactose intolerant because I've done the genetic testing. And I think over the years, purposefully including small amounts of dairy in my diet has helped my body probably build up more enzymes to help me digest it. And so I've found I can do a little bit of cheese here and there, some sour cream in my chili. If there is a dairy-free version, I'll probably head towards that, just better safe than sorry. But like, sometimes only the real deal will do.
Yeah, no, I get it. And the more, this is what I talk with my patients about, is just the more that you, it's like a bucket. And as you're filling it with drops of water, whether it's toxins, you're dealing with infections, you're dealing with stress, these foods are also triggers. So as you eliminate these other things, you're healing your gut, you can... Generally, most people can begin to tolerate many of these foods a lot better. Talk about the autoimmune spectrum, and the higher you are in the spectrum, the more dialed in you have to be on this. And as you are recovering and your autoimmune markers are coming down and you're feeling better, and maybe you're getting off your medications, you're going back down the spectrum and you might be able to add various things back in. We split our time between Austin and Santa Fe. And the air and the quality of everything here is so much better that I can tolerate things in Santa Fe that I cannot tolerate in Austin, where it's hot, humid, the molds are high, and I think there's just more people and more pollution and toxins.
I love that you talk about that spectrum, because I don't have an autoimmune disease, but that's how I think about my life too. If it is right before a big book tour event, I'm about to go on tour for 2 or 3 weeks, I'm going to be hitting the road, 10 different cities, my worth it barometer is real small, real small. I keep my diet pretty tight because I know it's going to help me feel my best and feel my most energized, and I'm not going to take any chances. If I'm home with my family over Christmas break, or like my husband and I were in New York City, and after, just in January, and after I did all of my work stuff, we had like 4 days where we were just exploring the city together. My worth it barometer was off the charts. I had pizza, I had bagels, like all of the stuff that I love that I was so excited to eat. And because I was walking everywhere and I had no stress and we could sleep in the morning and didn't have to wake up early and I wasn't working, I tolerated all of that stuff so beautifully. And it was such a nice kind of lesson, I think, that your context really, really matters in the kind of perspective of your dietary choices.
And it's so often that many people do just the opposite, right? Like, I'm stressed, I'm traveling, I'm going to eat poorly, or I'm stressed, so I'm going to indulge in this stuff. And I keep telling people, like, that is the wrong time to do it, right? That is the time to be so dialed in. And then exactly as you just put it, the times where you're all those other burdens are removed, then you can handle this additional burden of this food. Again, I'll give the caveat of, if you have autoimmunity, do not recommend gluten or dairy.
Yeah, but you're totally right. And I think that's what the Whole30 is so good for. I have heard so many people say, I'm a Whole30 alumni and my dad died. We lost everything in a house fire. This really incredibly stressful, like, awful situation happened, and I started a Whole30 again. And I know that most people would look at that and think, wow, that makes no sense. Whole30 can be stressful, it can be hard, but they wanted to feel so grounded in their dietary practice, and they knew that Whole30 would help them have the best energy, the most regulated nervous system, the best sleep, the best digestion, and that was going to spill over into helping them navigate these really stressful situations well. And I think that's such a beautiful way to approach it from a place of self-care in a really difficult season.
Absolutely. Well, one of the other things that you have spoken about over the years more recently is boundaries. And I love boundaries. So can we dive into, just first, how did you get there? What was your path to speaking out so much about boundaries? And then how has your life changed because of that?
I know it might seem maybe to the outside like a weird flex, but it's not. I would consider the Whole 30 like a boundary boot camp. What I realized early in the days of leading and guiding people through the Whole 30 is during any elimination diet, you say no a lot. You're saying no to the break room pizza, the glass of wine at happy hour, the birthday party cake. And I quickly realized that people have a hard time saying no. They have a hard time saying no, even when it's something they can completely control, like whether or not they drink that glass of wine. So I started helping people say no during the elimination phase with confidence. And once they figured out that I was good at helping them say no to that, they started asking me, okay, well, what about my mother-in-law who's always dropping by without calling, or my coworker who's always gossiping, or my friend who's always emotionally dumping? And in October 2020, I'd been helping people with boundaries through my Instagram channel and my newsletter for years. And in October 2020, I woke up in the middle of the night with a fully formed book proposal. I want to write a book about boundaries, and I want to give people scripts for what they can say word for word when they're in these difficult situations with all of their relationships. And that was really where the book of boundaries came from.
And where do you think you developed that skill?
I remember that the first boundary I ever set, and it happened when I was fresh out of rehab for the second time for my drug addiction. I had relapsed. Nobody knew I had relapsed. I was trying so hard to pretend that I was fine. None of my friends knew. None of my family members knew. And I found myself once again at a party where I didn't belong with people I didn't know, doing God knows what in the bathroom. And I was so afraid for my recovery, but also for my life at that point. I didn't think I would make it back a second time. That an honest to God boundary tumbled out. I said to my friend, I can't be here. This isn't safe for me. I need to leave. And I thought that boundaries, like saying no and sticking up for myself, advocating for myself, I thought it would make my life so small. I thought that it would be pushing people away and I would be ostracized and I would be alone. And I realized that not only did I have the power to advocate for myself, boundaries actually expanded my life beyond my wildest imagination. They were key in my recovery, key in my health journey. And since then, they've been the key to protecting my time, my energy, my mental health, and my peace. So it was really a life-changing experience for me, and I was so happy to share that and help other people set those same limits in their own relationships with the book.
And how has your life changed? Have you had people who have left as friends, people who, as you've stood up for your boundaries, that I'm sure you don't see it as a negative consequence because it's your boundary, but just how has that shifted in your life? And have you had examples where people have fallen away or not responded well to your boundary?
Oh yeah, of course. Right. In the earliest days, I began setting boundaries with my friends. I was like, you can't use drugs in front of me. You can't bring drugs into my house. You can't light up a joint in front of me. You can't ask me if I want anything. And I had a lot of friends fall away because they weren't able or willing to respect my boundaries there. And again, as you said, I did not see that as a loss. I was really protecting myself. But even in smaller cases, my mom wants to come for a visit, and I say to my mom, we would love to have you. A week is too long. We're in a busy season right now. We can't host you for a week. So you can either come for a week and like spend the last 3 or 4 days in an Airbnb. I'll look for one for you. I'll split the cost with you. Like, we got you covered. Or come for like 4 days for a long weekend and we'll plan a longer visit later. And what I've discovered is, first of all, most of the time people are just like, okay, thanks for letting me know. Like, I don't get a lot of pushback. I don't get a lot of defensiveness. People are just happy that I shared my limit with them. And then it makes the relationship better. My visits are better because I know that it's for a period of time that works for my family and we can be all in during those 4 days. People are happy when you tell them what you need and you don't expect them to guess or be mind readers. It has certainly helped my marriage. I got married 3 years ago, and I think the only reason that my husband and I were able to successfully move in together and I was able to integrate him into my life with my son, who at the time I think was when we started dating was like six, is because I set clear boundaries around what I was and wasn't willing to do in terms of this new relationship. So they've been a complete game changer. And I know they have been for people who have read the book and started implementing them too.
And I don't know if you feel this way, but I feel like, frankly, the practice of an elimination diet at Whole30, it teaches you to know how things affect you. And I feel like it also, like, it sets you up for understanding how people affect you, how environments affect you, how scenarios affect you. I mean, it was really what I would tell my patients, the gift that I'm giving you is understanding these things. And so I too feel like I've been a person who's, I think, been pretty good with boundaries much of my life, probably to the way that I didn't always say it in the politest way. And I think I'm learning to say it with kindness now and not force. But it's something that to me is, how do I want to describe it? Like, I had a boundary situation recently and it was so clear to me. I mean, just the way that gluten is, like, this is an absolute no for me. And this is a no. And I'm going to tell you that this is a no. And I'm trying to articulate how an elimination diet or a Whole30 in setting boundaries actually are very well connected. And maybe you can speak to that.
I do have an idea because I completely agree with you. I think for me, what it comes down to is that the Whole30 and elimination diets teach you to trust yourself. We are all so overwhelmed with outside input as to what we should eat, what's healthy, what's not healthy, what we should be doing. And so many factors along the way, especially for women, like the patriarchy and stereotypically rigid gender roles and diet culture and religious influences and trauma have, in my case, addiction and recovery have taught me I can't be trusted. I can't trust myself. And when you do an elimination diet, what you are saying is, I don't care what Time magazine comes out with next week. I don't care what this wellness influencer is telling me is or isn't healthy. I have done this experiment. And I know how this works in my body, and I trust myself to make the right decisions for me based on that intel. And then those other decisions that come up in your life when something doesn't feel good, not only can you register that it doesn't feel right, but you trust yourself to say, this doesn't feel right. And now you feel like you have the power to advocate for yourself. So I think there's a huge overlap there. And I do feel like the Whole30 can be sort of your first entry to the concept of boundaries and restoring that connection with yourself and that trust in yourself.
Absolutely. So trust, yes, that's an excellent way to put it, is trusting yourself. And that's exactly what I would tell patients. Trusting when you walk into a room, is the energy bad? Does it, do you sense the mold? Is, as you're around this food, how do you feel? Same thing with people, relationships, all of it. It's excellent. Yeah. So learning to trust yourself, getting, I mean, frankly, getting all the gunk out in order to see clearly and to feel clearly about trusting yourself, whether it's food, people, relationships, toxins, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's a good point too. It can be really hard to pinpoint what's making you feel not good when you have so many things in your diet or in your environment or in your life that are making you feel not good, right? It's really hard. And an elimination diet really makes that crystal clear because you're pulling stuff out, bringing it in one at a time, carefully and systematically. You can apply that same framework to lots of things in your life. Take a detox from social media and pull it back in very small doses and see how it impacts you. Take a break from relationships and pull them back in small doses. I have done the Whole30 kind of framework in a bunch of different areas of my life, and it's always been really, really helpful.
Absolutely. Well, this has been great. I've so loved catching up with you. One of the things that I like to end with is just three things that you would recommend to our listeners in order to take back their health.
Ooh, I love that. The first piece of advice I always give people, especially when people ask me like, well, what's your best dietary tip, is cook food at home. If you start there, you're in great shape. That was one of the benefits of my first Whole30, is learning how to cook different ingredients in ways that I really liked, especially vegetables. So start cooking your own food at home. I love that. When it comes to boundaries, one of the tips I always give is implement a pause before you say yes to anything automatically. And this could be food, it could be drink, it could be an invitation, it could be, can I come stay with you? Whatever that looks like, implement a pause. Maybe it's a minute, maybe it's 5 minutes, maybe it's an hour, maybe it's, let me check with my family or look at my calendar and I'll get back to you over the weekend. But stop saying yes automatically and check in with yourself to ask yourself, what do I need? How do I feel? And then again, trust yourself to know what's best for you. So that trust yourself might be the third piece of information, because I think you do know what is right for you in that moment. And I want you to feel empowered to use that information to advocate for yourself.
Absolutely. The trusting yourself, I think, is probably the biggest takeaway here. And not just eliminating all the noise to trust yourself about what's right for you. So yes, thank you so much for that. Well, this has been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for your time. We look forward to reading your new book, and congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you so much, Amy. I was so happy to get this invitation. This is the first podcast that I'm actually even talking about the new book, so I can't wait to share it with my audience too and introduce you to my whole 30 years.
Thanks so much. Good to see
Thanks, Amy.
All right.
You too.
Bye. I want to thank this week's guests for sharing their time and knowledge, and thank you for listening. To read the full show notes for each episode, which include a summary, timestamp, quotes, and any resources mentioned, please visit amymyersmd.com/podcast. Lastly, if you've enjoyed this episode, I'd love if you would leave a rating and a review on Apple or Spotify, and we'll select a few to read out loud in a future episode. Tune in next week to hear from another inspiring guest as we help you take back your health.